I'm Cameron Crookston.
And I'm Patrick Murray. And this is Video Queens, the show where two queens take a look back at the movies that made them.
And this week we watched But I'm a Cheerleader.
Or did we?
Okay, but we did watch But I'm a Cheerleader, in actuality.
Queer canon?
Fan favorite, the people's champion of queer indie, lesbian rom-com adies.
Often said to be the bring it on of lesbianism.
Okay, because of the pom-poms?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really it.
Okay, no, that's fair. I mean, I would say it's like the Citizen Kane of indie lesbian rom-coms with RuPaul in them.
Citizen Gay.
Let's try and top that.
Pause for laughter. Pause for laughter.
Yeah, so we watched So But I'm a Cheerleader. I mean, where to fucking begin with this movie? This is a movie I think I've seen so many times that I don't really remember the first time I saw it.
Yes, I remember seeing it I think pretty young. And at that point, it felt, okay, wait, no. Should we do a plot thing quickly?
Should we do a plot? Okay, we can do that. Do you wanna?
Sure. So really quick, for anyone who hasn't seen But I'm a Cheerleader, you're wrong. But also it is about a closeted cheerleader played by a fabulous Natasha Lyonne, who is sent to gay conversion therapy, essentially, where she is, she does not know she's a lesbian, but she's being told she is, and she needs to go away to this little camp thing. What's it called again?
So it's called True Directions.
It's not Camp Ovation?
Camp Ovation, so many layers as to why that's wrong.
Where she meets Clea DuVall. She actually kind of like figures out that she's a lesbian mm-hmm. in her supposed gay conversion. And though the subject matter is very serious, it's very like bright and colorful and funny and irreverent.
So irreverent.
Yeah, it's just a rompin' good time.
It's fully a romp. It's toe-tapping fun. I don't think I've ever said that about a non-musical, but I stand by it.
I actually imagined, like, there could have been a musical number in this. Like, there wasn't, but that would fit.
I think when I was watching this, I was like, in a world in which every even remotely popular movie becomes a musical, how is there not a musical of this? And I feel like there was, and it closed in 5 minutes.
That is so true.
This is begging for a musical adaptation.
Yes. I just got chills.
You know, right?
But I'm a cheerleader.
So there is a musical. I'm not sure why it has not come to
Toronto Fringe.
Yeah. We're like one of the Mervishes for a long weekend. Yeah. So I think just to underscore that, like, while if you listen to the synopsis by itself, this could be a very dark movie. It's really bright and fun.
Yes. I remember seeing this, I think before I knew that, unfortunately, gay conversion therapy is a real thing. So
right.
It kind of seemed like a sketch you would write, like, oh, what if you, like, you know, a gay person was sent to a place with only other gay people to try to become less gay, and like the ridiculousness of that reality of like, how would you make someone straight? What is sexuality and behavior?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it does feel a little bit like the writer is kind of ignoring what actual conversion therapy is, because I think part of the way they pitch it and part of the way they try and make it not just seem like they're making light of a really like horrible thing, is they pitch it more as if she's going to rehab for gayness. So it's less about, I don't think it has a lot of parallels to true conversion therapy. So like, as you said, she's not aware that she's gay. And in kind of the first 5 minutes of the movie, her parents and all of her friends have an intervention for her. And then she gets sent off to True Directions, which is, looks and feels like a summer camp for like 18-year-olds. But even within that, it's very much like, there's like a 5-step program they do. And it's got a very like, you know, they have like group therapy. So it feels a lot like sobriety or rehab or like AA. And I think the mom actually says that it's like Alcoholics Anonymous for homosexuals. So it's not, I don't think it's trying to address actual conversion therapy. Yeah, maybe we should kind of just like talk about the way they do the rehab.
Okay, so Natasha Lyonne plays Megan. So Megan, so there is a 5-step program at True Directions, which is like, 1, admit you're homosexual. Mm-hmm. 2, rediscover your gender identity. Oh. 3, family identity, which is, I think, probably my favorite one, because that's about everyone finding their root and it's just their parents. Great. Like classic therapy. Mm. 4 is demystifying the opposite sex. And 5 is simulated sexual lifestyle.
Mm. My favorite step is probably, I do really like the root discussion, and I had a good laugh at some of the roots, but yeah. I think rediscovering your gender identity is my favorite because of the set design of this movie. So like, maybe I will mention that I think when I was young, the thing I liked most about this movie, and maybe that it like, this was a signal that this was a movie that was kind of like on my wavelength, is that like the set and costume design is so like, it's got a very like John Waters-y feel. Everything is in kind of like very bright colors, and all the characters are color coded in like extremely aggressive ways.
Yes, so like it is always like it is always like a Midwestern gender reveal at all times.
Yeah, so when at True Directions, almost everything is either pink or blue. The girls wear monochromatic pink all the time. The boys have blue uniforms. All the rooms are either blue or pink. I think the girls sleep in a giant pink room that looks like the interior of a vagina. Occasionally there are purples and greens, but it's mostly those two colors. And there's also just like two-dimensional paper cutouts all over the place for no particular reason. Like when the boys are doing their gender, rediscovering their gender, they have to like play football, and they're playing in a field where there's just like standees of like blue football guys, or like of like power tools.
Yeah. Okay, how much did you want one of those when you were a kid?
Like a standee of a hot football guy?
Not of a hot football guy, but there was something to me about like a life-sized, like those kind of like poster-y like things. Like, what would you even call that? Like, it's like those cardboard, it would be like at a movie store, at the movie store in the mall, there would be one of like Brad Pitt or something.
In answer to your question, like zero, it never even occurred to me to, and you asked it as if like it was the most universal experience. Like, how much do you love popsicles?
It just like dawned on me, like I wanted one so bad, and I feel like it was like before the internet, so like resources were limited.
It's true.
And it was like I was just trying to source one of those things, which is way more challenging than I would have thought, because obviously I would have wanted Lisa Kudrow. And as just kind of like a bat signal, I guess.
You know what, Patrick?
Yeah.
You're actually not dead yet. You could get one.
If I could get Lisa Kudrow in the Aunt Sassy thing as like, the thing is, I'd probably need more than one. I'd buy them in bulk and they'd be in every room.
You would be a crazy person. I think we've derailed. Oh, so getting back to like, yeah. So the aesthetic is bonkers. There's also like plastic flowers everywhere that the head of the camp is always like spritzing.
Yes. Yes.
And it's just, and also, okay. One thing that like, I think is really interesting. And I thought was such a very like, I appreciate that this is such a detailed visual because in the world before we get to True Directions, we see Megan at home. We see Megan at her school. Megan's cheerleading outfit is orange and everything in their home is shades of orange and yellow and browns.
Right.
And so when we get to True Directions, we get this aggressive pop of binary colors. And yes, it really makes it stand out. So like, I thought that was just like genius.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think in general, like all of that, like the gendered colors thing is so ridiculous.
It is.
Like, it's, yeah. So exposing that by making them so loud, like they're blinding. Because that's the thing, like it's like, you know, you like it's an explode, like a cake exploding into blue confetti and starting a forest fire. Like it's so stupid. Like you're like, no, the child just has a penis. Like when did we pick these colors?
You know what's interesting about this is that I don't have exactly a year, but I think like before the 19th century, the blue and pink were actually flipped.
Hot tea alert.
So pink, because pink is more or less a shade of red, and red is like a very powerful, strong color, pink would have been more associated. Like, it wasn't like little babies wore pink and blue. Like generally this kind of like extreme attention to fashion detail is a product of like the 19th and early 20th century. But in general, in terms of like what colors were associated with, pink would have been a more masculine color. Blue, because it's much softer and it's like the color of the sky and nature, would have been a more feminine color.
Oh, mm-hmm. I love that. Okay, that's so funny because I think when I went to my witch store, they were saying that like the red candle is like the masculine one. So therefore probably pink makes sense. Yeah. And the like the blues and greens, I think are like Mother Earth.
Exactly. Like blue is like soft and gentle and like water, and red is like pinks and reds are like fire, blood, you know, the male, men love fire and blood. That's their whole thing.
Oh my God. Have you ever set blood on fire?
I'm just saying, if you want to find a husband, you go to the fire and blood store. They are packed in there.
Okay. I thought it was interesting. I will just say like, I had a moment because Clea DuVall is in this movie. And isn't Clea DuVall also in Girl Interrupted?
She is.
Because she is fully playing Angelina Jolie's character in Girl Interrupted, but in this movie.
That's very true.
Coincidence?
You wish. Yeah, so Clea DuVall plays Graham.
Gaia DuVall.
Ooh, bam. So Clea DuVall plays, I feel like this was the beginning of Clea DuVall playing visible references to lesbianism, because like I feel like everything she's done since this, she is there to signal that there are queer characters in this movie in the best way possible. I love Clea DuVall. I have a huge crush on her. She plays Graham, and Graham is kind of this like I don't know, like kind of like a badass figure. She's probably the most rebellious of the camp. She's like really not drinking the Kool-Aid. She's the one who kind of says, this is all bullshit. This is like, the secret is not getting caught. We're not actually learning how to be straight. Whereas a lot of the other characters are like, oh, I'm so excited to be a heterosexual when the program works. And they obviously, and at first she's like really harsh to Megan because she thinks she's prissy, and Clea DuVall is like such a like cool person. And they eventually fall in love. And then I eventually fall in love with Clea DuVall. There is a scene where all the girls are getting ready in the morning. Also, they're in the bathroom. The wallpaper is just a million fake daisies hot glued to a wall. I want it. And she is in slow motion. She's just like cupping her hand under the faucet and like drinking water. And it's like, she's not close to her mouth, because when you drink water, you leave your mouth fully open. And it's just like pouring off her lips. And yes. That's my route to bisexuality.
She was your root.
like when we're going around a circle, like, Cameron, what made you a bisexual? I'd be like, Clea Duvall drank water.
But then they don't pass you because it just has to be your parents.
Well, not every, so the root is also really funny because there's a scene, Megan is always kind of one step behind everyone else's progress. And she doesn't have a root yet. So like everyone's going around sharing what their root are. And some of the other kids' roots are, so for the women, the roots are things like, I was born in France. Graham's right. root is my mom got married in pants, which is one of my favorite lines. And they're all said with such a matter of fact, like, well, obviously.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. What's your root, Patrick?
I think my root is going to New York with my mom. Going to New York with my mom, oh. just the two of us, like mummy son trip to New York. And I remember we went to see the play Take Me Out on Broadway. And they were like, oh, because again, like the theater is not like, there's no like MPAA or whatever, MPA or whatever the fuck, like rating for theater. Like, it's not like, oh, this is PG, this is AA-14, or this is rated R. So my mom and I had tickets to this play on Broadway that was like the hot ticket. And I remember they were like, oh, just so you know, like there is like male nudity in this. And they're saying this to my mom, like as we're about to be seated. My mom was like, okay, like that's fine. Who cares? And again, like not that it was ever an issue, but I don't think we realized like how much male nudity there was, because there's like a full shower scene.
Oh my God. Wait, what is this play and why haven't I seen this?
Oh, it's so, okay. First of all, the fact that you don't know it is, I mean, edit this out. Take Me Out is a play about a Major League Baseball player who comes out as gay. Oh. And it's like, and it's the, I'm trying to remember. I know that he has like, I think his agent or someone is this like very flamboyant guy played by on Broadway, what's his face?
I love him.
You would know him though. It's like, he was on American Horror Story. He's like tall and like lanky. Gay.
Is he kind of Southern?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh.
He was on True Blood as well.
Yeah.
Dennis O'Hare.
Okay, awesome.
So it's like about this Major League Baseball player who comes out as gay. And a lot of it is set in the locker room.
Oh my God. Your mom is very cool, by the way.
So it's all like the conversations of like the team about the fact that he's gay now. And like, what does that change? What does that, whatever. And it includes a ton, just dicks on dicks, you know, my favorite.
That's where you got it from. Because you know what? You saw this and you thought, oh, this is what entertainment is. I'm going to love this. And now every time you see something that is not wall-to-wall dicks, you're like, your root gets activated.
Yes.
And you're like, I have to get my roots touched up.
Yes, I'm coming in expecting 12 to 14 dicks for an extended period of time.
Well, now I know.
And it makes sense. Frequently let down. Did you also know that your root chakra is your booty hole?
I did know that.
You did?
No, I'm lying to you. okay, my root is actually quite similar to your root.
Okay, yeah.
When I was, I guess I would have been 7. There was like one night, it was over the summer, and all of my friends, boys and girls, played softball. And surprise, surprise, shock of your lifetime, I did not play softball as a child. Not interested, thank you so much. But yeah. Went to acting classes. And there was one particular thing, it was like a Friday night where like basically like none of the kids were available to hang out because everyone had like a different softball game. And I was just feeling like very lonely and gay. So I was like sitting in the corner singing on my own to myself. And my mom was like, you know what? We're going to go out. Well, like, let's go see a movie. And she took me to see the only thing that was playing at the time, which was Death Becomes Her.
Yep, there it is.
So I learned from an early age, baseball, lonely, Meryl Streep and Goldie Hawn and High Camp is family. Love. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow. That's beautiful.
Right? It's a good origin story. That's beautiful.
So here's another little thing that I was wondering, and as I was reflecting on the movie, because basically they do end up finding like, there's like a second camp. So these like two gays who I guess are like former campers at True Direction have basically like house the people that get kicked out. And then they have like, so they're kind of the opposite of the, like they're the safe place people can go to just like be themselves.
They wear purple fatigues that are camouflage, and everything in their house is painted rainbow.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Obviously, like in the movie, that's a great idea. Like rainbow aesthetics are like, bleh, but
it's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah. I mean, every interior in this, I say I love, but it is designed to like give, it's like gives you a stress headache and then you vomit from the anxiety.
It is so that. Yeah. Like I the only word I can always think with these colors is like bleeding. Like it's like, I felt like watching this movie like turned my like living room blue.
I think what you said earlier, what I thought was such like a good point, is the idea that like the way the set design plays with the idea of like normative gender or binary gender is that it cranks it up to such an extreme that it makes it absurd.
Yes.
And it actually makes it seem, it takes the idea of like, we're going to make you your natural gender, and it presents what is thought to be natural in a way that makes it look so artificial.
Yes, because the whole thing is that like, your expression of your gender is entirely yours. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, oh, like this is how, it's just how you express yourself. And like, sure, we certainly, there are like some commonalities in any grouping, but like, yeah, the ridiculousness of them being like, okay, so the boys, like you have to learn football.
Right.
When like, even there are obviously like the straightest guys in the world who don't play football, and the color thing where like, it's almost like the more insidious thing is that like the Instagram photo of just the pale blue baby booties.
Right. Yes. But sorry, I interrupt.
Right, I'm like laughing at like describing something as insidious. But like as opposed to this, which is like beating you over the head with it, so you realize how ridiculous it is.
Right. And yeah, so I think that is kind of like the point of this movie, is to like expose the things that we just kind of like take for granted and normalize. You were trying to figure out which character you would be.
Yeah, like the thing is that I think we all would love to be a Graham. Mm-hmm. But like I know I'm not a Graham. This no. I know to be true.
I don't think either of us is a Graham. I know exactly who I would be, but I'm going to let you finish. You know what? This is such a read. And this is maybe even a little homophobic of me to say. I think you are Andre.
Andre.
I want to talk about one more thing. Then we should probably take a break and pop up to the problematic.
Of course.
So there are some really... I can't believe there are some great cameos in this, and like the cast in general. So like, you know, the kids at the camp are all kind of young talent, but most of the adults are kind of reference people. And I can't believe we have not said this. So there's a woman who runs the camp. I'll get to her in a minute. Her name is Mary and I live for her, but the kind of head and only counselor named Mike is played by RuPaul out of Drag.
Yes.
And I mean, like, so like, this is a time, and like, I think what the children need to understand is that like RuPaul in the 1990s was like, don't come at me for this. Like, do not tweet at me. Kind of a has-been a little bit in 99. Not like in a total like washed up kind of way, but like RuPaul had this like real pop moment.
The moment had passed
and Ru was just kind of now like, famous for being famous. He did a lot of cameos in the late 90s. He was on like Sabrina, Teenage Witch and all that stuff. And yes. It was more, he did a sister, and we're all like, oh my God, RuPaul.
Again, like RuPaul did like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And like it was like he was kind of doing like the Kathy Griffin season one circuit.
He was fully a Kathy Griffin, and he got a lot of these kind of like roles. If you needed to signal queerness or signal kind of like, you know, walk on the wild side feelings. He plays the guidance counselor in the Brady Bunch movies.
Which also like jokes on us, like, he was working. Like it's like, no,
fully, yes, fully. Yes. She's always had the hustle and she can do the job. But yeah, like in that, actually, I always think about it this way. There is a moment in the movie, Object of My Affection, which is about Jennifer Aniston is a straight woman who falls in love with Paul Rudd, who's gay. And there's a scene where Jennifer Aniston has Paul Rudd over for like family dinner. And Jennifer Aniston's sister, Allison Janney, and she turns to Paul Rudd and basically says, "Oh, you're gay? My husband knows RuPaul. We'll have you over sometime." And he gets this look of like, "You homophobic bitch." It's supposed to be such a like, oh, all gay people love this celebrity who was popular 10 years ago.
Which is so funny because now if you said that, I feel like everyone would be like, oh my God.
I would like slap her across the face and kiss her full on the lips and say, I love you. Yeah, so it is funny that Rue, and also I think because Drag Race hasn't come out yet and Rue in this movie isn't in drag, is the boy the whole time. It was one of those things where like, you can watch the whole movie and have no idea. I think I can actually remember telling people who had seen the movie before, who watched the whole movie without realizing and being, it's like, do you know who plays Mike? And they're like, who? I'm like, that's RuPaul. And they're like, oh, really?
Cookie Monster? You told the Cookie Monster that?
He couldn't believe it. Some other great cameos. You're not going to think they're great. You're going to do the thing where this is going to be another Neve Campbell's brother moment. So Megan's parents are played by
Earth Bud- Row.
What?
There's like Fur Throw or something.
You're so wrong, but you just a perfect synonym.
Wool like scarf.
You played the thesaurus game. So Megan's mom is played by Mink Stole. Who was a John Waters actor. She was in like, she's in Female Trouble. She plays Divine's daughter in Female Trouble. And I feel like Mink Stole is there again, like it's a wink to kind of like, cause this movie really follows in the footsteps of John Waters. Like it's way toned down, but the general aesthetic and vibe. So Mink Stole is there to like tell you where we are. And I think and similarly- And it
makes you know, like this is a for us by us thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, this is about gay people, but then you have someone like that in it. Like, and again, I mean, I don't know who she is, but like you do. And like, and you know, like when that movie came out, like older people would have got it.
Yeah, 100%. Her casting is kind of an inside joke.
And it's that like rainbow dog whistle of like, we're all on the same side.
I love that expression. Megan's dad's played by Bud Cort, who was Harold in Harold and Maude.
Okay.
Which is a big deal.
I've either watched all of that, some of that, or none of that.
Well, those are the options, Patrick. There's no fourth thing you could have said there.
Yep, that's true.
That's what it is. And then the head of the camp, who we haven't really talked about, is Kathy Moriarty.
Kathy Moriarty. Rick and Moriarty.
No, you're confusing people. People are writing this down. They're going to fail the test I've given them. So I know Kathy Moriarty mostly as the villain from the Casper movie, but
that's who she is.
That's who she is.
Oh, work.
She's also the problematic trans character from Soap Dish. I watched Disclosure last week because I was teaching it for a class, and there kind of this one point where they're kind of going over the trope of like the secret trans person. Like you, at the end of the movie, you find out the villain is actually trans and that makes them extra evil. And at the end of Soap Dish, Kathy Moriarty, who plays this kind of like conniving soap actress, at the end, Whoopi Goldberg brings in her high school yearbook and shows that she used, quote, used to be a man. It's not.
Okay, so she, I'm also just realizing that like, she's very much like, okay, first of all, she's obviously like talented and amazing in her own right, but mm-hmm. it's kind of like we wanted Kathleen Turner.
Yes, yes, that feels real.
Yeah,
she is kind of like the Bill Pullman to her Bill Paxton or something. Like she's like diet caffeine free Kathleen Turner. And Kathleen Moriarty is great in this. She's fully. Chewing all the scenery, chewing the monochromatic pink scenery. And she plays this like strict kind of drill sergeant-y. And she's always dressed in these kind of like knockoff Chanel bright pink or purple suits.
Yes.
And, but she's got this like pinched, angry, aggressive voice. And yes. she's fantastic. And she has some like really amazing lines. There's one point, I always think about this, where, I think the guys from the other camp, the guys who run like the Renegade Gay Camp are like on their property or something. And she like peeks her head out and she says, she calls them, like, she's like, get out of here, you little inverts. And I was just like, it's such a-
Can we say missed opportunity for their thing to not be called the Renegades?
That sounds like renovation though.
Yeah.
Or rent a gay.
Which I mean, if your dinner party's a lacking,
do come a knacking. Invert was a term in the 19th century that sexologists used to describe homosexuals because they had like inverted personalities or inverted sexual gender identities.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, when you went to Buddy's, Buddy's is a theater / nightclub in Toronto for the gays. And they have different hand stamps. And one
hear that,
was...
Texas?
Come, when you come visit, they had like different hand stamps. They used to have like pervert. And sometimes you would get a hand stamp that said invert. And then I would walk around all night going, can I see your hand?
No.
Do you know what that means?
Oh,
I did not.
No.
I definitely did not do that. So yeah, Kathy Moriarty is amazing in this. Is anyone else good? One of
Michelle
boys...
Williams.
Oh, Michelle Williams. I always forget her.
Michelle Williams is in this. Like,
Also Rufio from Hook is in this.
Yep.
Was one of my big like pre-adolescent crushes.
Yep. Died shortly after, unfortunately.
He is still alive. He was in the Avatar TV show.
There's an Avatar TV show?
Is that the
Last Airbender or something?
Yes, The Last Airbender, not the blue people. Why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we'll pop up to the problematic.
Let's. And we're back.
Oh, we're back.
Thank you for sticking with us. Oh, my God.
So grateful.
Well, we've finished the tour of the main floor. Would you like to take a look up in the problematic?
Absolutely.
Follow me.
Thank you. Oh, it's dusty.
Kind of like your vagina.
I'm cutting that out. So up in the problematic, I have definitely got at least one, maybe one and a half boxes up here.
Yes, I would say I have one and a half. I wonder if ours are the same or different.
That would be, well, they'll be easier to move. Those are the options. It'll be easier to move them if they are in fact the same box.
Right.
Why don't you start us off?
Okay, so mine was on, I forgot the character's name.
Describe them.
Mustache.
Jan.
Jan the Mustache Man. Okay, so there's a character named Jan who is at the True Direction camp. I don't know if this is fully a box, but I thought there was going to be an interesting, some interesting tension, because Jan ends up saying like, I don't belong here. I'm straight.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if we were going to take a look at at the trans experience is Jan saying like, no, I'm straight. I'm just like, I didn't know if that conversation was happening.
Yeah.
Because Jan seems to be that like at odds the most with all of the, with the dresses and all of the like stereotypical, quote unquote, like female activities that they need to perform. And I didn't know if we were kind of getting into that like maybe Jan, I didn't know if we were going there. And then it was just kind of Jan being like, no, people think I'm a lesbian because I look the way that I do. Mm-hmm. And I think she then just leaves.
Okay. So yeah, we definitely have this same box in common. So I also clocked this. And particularly the scene in which Jan leaves, because it's so strange and underdeveloped. And my theory is that Jan had a more prominent role in this movie, and then they edited it down, but kept just enough in to make it really confusing. Because there is a scene where they're in therapy. I think they're working on Megan's Root. And out of absolutely nowhere, Jan just kind of says, I'm a heterosexual. And RuPaul, who's running the session, goes like, no, honey, not quite. You're getting there. And Jan has this like epiphany where she's like, no, I've always been straight. But people think because... So Jan has a shaved head. She does visibly have a little bit of a mustache. It's generally kind of portrayed as being like a butch character. Yeah. And so, you know, she's like, no, just people think because I look this way and because like I don't wear dresses and I like to play football, that I'm gay, but I'm not. And she runs out crying, and RuPaul's response to this is, Jan, you're gay, you were molested. and kind of like laughs at her as he's saying it. And then Jan runs away from the scene crying, and we never see her again, and they don't mention her again. So a couple of things I need to break down to that is that, yes, I totally think you're right, is that maybe Jan's arc in there was to give a little bit of space between, you know, there's gender identity and there's sexual identity, and there is actually quite a bit of an overlap. And this is something that's always like a conversation around both science and culture as to like, you know, is being gay just about, you know, sexual object choice, as they call it, like who you want to have sex with.
Yeah.
And conventionally, we always say yes, but it's like, yeah, but there's a really high prevalence of femininity around, among gay men, and more kind of traditional masculine behavior around gay women. Anyway, so like True Directions kind of like bakes that into their program. And I could think it would be interesting if Jan was just, you know, a gender non-conforming straight woman. But we don't get that, and they leave it in, and it's so bizarre that they just never mention her again, but she gets this kind of breakout scene. And also the fact that Rue kind of says to her, and I kind of read this as being like what her root was.
Mm.
Like, no, Jan, you're not straight. We talked about this. Like, you were molested. That made you gay. Now you're here. He doesn't quite say that, but like, and the fact that it is kind of like he laughs as he's saying it. Like, I think he says, just look at yourself.
Yeah. Definitely fits, I think.
That fits, yeah, that's a problematic. In the remake, I think Jan gets a better story.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I guess like not to be a buzzkill, but I did feel like watching it this time around, I was also like, okay, again, like this is not, I kept on reminding myself this is not that movie, because I'm like, okay, this is a movie about gay conversion therapy. That is unfortunately like a reality that is still ongoing. Mm. And sometimes the tone of the movie could feel... There were moments that I was like, oh, I don't know if I feel like laughing right now, which wasn't, it was more about like the actual reality of like the feelings around it, of like these kids being like, I'm wrong, or like, I don't know how to be something different. Mm. And And I don't know, it kind of, I remember when I saw this, like truly not thinking gay conversion therapy was a thing. I don't think it's meant to, it's obviously not supposed to be a realistic look at what gay conversion therapy is like or the repercussions or any of those things.
Yeah.
So it's not really a problem as much as like, it was definitely like added to my awareness of like watching the movie that I don't think I left the movie the first time whenever it came out being like, oh wait, I should go like look that up or like that's real. It just seemed like this made up thing.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree that like also when I first saw the movie and the movie, the logic of the movie kind of I think supports this is this, it does create it does kind of treat the idea of conversion therapy as a fiction the movie's invented.
Yes.
And it kind of treats it like because it is likened to rehab and because like so like all of the therapeutic techniques, none of them are scientific or religious. They're all kind of cultural conditioning.
Yes.
Like it's like girls, you're gonna learn how to do laundry and do the dishes, then you're gonna, you know, like learn how to like flirt with boys. It seemed like it was kind of taking the general pressure we put on gay people and the concept of the closet and taking all those abstractions and giving them a really absurd physical form in the camp. So the True Directions kind of becomes a metaphor for straight pressure onto gay kids.
Yeah, I think it was like there's a moment where Megan is told by her parents, like, if you're still gay, you can't come home.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's so huge. And like, it's like the performances in the movie are really good. Natasha Lyonne still like, there is still that like betrayal of like the parents saying like, no, you can't come home. Mm-hmm. But it also then like in the world of this movie, it's like, oh yeah, but she just gets to go to the other camp. It's like, she gets kicked out, is truly homeless. Mm-hmm. And then like, and again, I'm getting on a tangent. Like, of course there are LGBT resources and like stuff, like people do help, but it was just kind of like, oh, I'm kicked out. Oh, I have a new home. Like it's here. Like my parents will work on it. And I'll like try to get the girl back, which again, I'm just like, okay, Patrick, like this is not that movie. Like this is not the movie about the heartbreak of like your parents kicking you out because of your sexuality.
This is not Boy Erased.
This is exactly.
But the parallels are, I think, fair point because it is almost about that.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely a little more aware of that this time. I think nostalgia kind of like put a bubble around me, so I didn't, it prevented me from going too deep. But when you do think about it, and I would actually be really curious, the experience of like a younger person or someone who just never saw this movie watching it now. I think part of it too is that like conversion therapy is way more in the public eye in the last.
Yes.
In the last decade, probably the last 20 years. But I think it's fair to say that like when this movie came out, there was just, it wasn't kind of a popular talking point.
So, okay. So like the professors in the house, with the candlestick question.
She did it.
We knew. And death becomes her. Mm. What do you know about gay conversion therapy that I will let you safely assume that I don't?
Fair. I mean, I will disclaimer that my doctorate is in drag and like theater. So like, it's not—
Oh my God, I thought you just said my doctor is in drag.
My doctorate. Okay.
With your doctorate, yes.
Yes. So all that is to say is like, I'm, you know, my background's not science or even necessarily this history. I know a bit. But one thing about the history of conversion therapy is that in terms of like medical attempts to cure homosexuality, that was the first 100 years of basically like when the term homosexuality is initially, like a medical term for a disorder. It is German. Sexology was really big in Germany.
Is it?
Yeah, it's German.
Oh.
And so like, you know, the first from that classification until the early 70s, 73, homosexuality was classified as a mental illness, and so was variously tried to be treated and cured by psychiatrists and doctors. Season two of American Horror Story. There's not like a unified practice, because the thing is, it doesn't prove to be very successful. Even Freud actually kind of comes out saying that that homosexuality, you know, like, is pretty much set by the time you hit puberty. And so any attempt to change it is actually going to do more harm than good. But then his daughter becomes like really big into conversion therapy. So like, maybe like, you know, let's not
plot twist with Fraulein.
Yes. Fraulein conversion.
Mother of the house of conversion.
In terms of like trying to cure homosexuality, yeah, like a pretty long history. So like after 73, it's no longer a mental illness. And slowly the concept of trying to cure it becomes increasingly more fringe and less mainstream.
Right.
But in terms of conversion therapy, the way we kind of see it now, where it's this like weird mix of like Christianity and pseudoscientific procedures, as far as I know, that kind of really like hits its stride in the 90s. And so I think when people think of like Boy Erased,
yeah,
that kind of story, and the kids getting sent to like highly religious conversion therapy camps, that they produce a lot of documents that kind of claim the scientificness of it, and none of that really works. That's something that I think is like since the 90s has been more of a thing.
Right, very like wellness blog, like
exactly, yeah. And like church group, and I think because up until the 60s it was still part of mainstream medicine, so for it to become this like weird, I think like the radical religious right does kind of like revive it and turn it into their own thing in the 90s. So like our version of it is only about 30 years old.
Gotcha.
And I think therefore it makes sense that this would not be as well known a phenomenon in the late 90s when this movie came out.
Right. It's almost like someone heard that it was a real thing and then they wrote a movie about it, because they were like, LOL, that's so stupid.
That's entirely possible.
Now we know. Mm-hmm. Okay, so final thoughts.
I think one thing I just want to underline is, I think, so like, I liked this movie because it is like colorful and clever and funny. But what I think elevates this movie to like the truly A+ status it has is that the love story between Megan and Graham is so sweet and is played with such sincerity and with like such surprising amounts of subtlety that it just like there is a scene where they go to a bunch of the kids sneak out of camp and go to a gay bar. Megan and Graham are kind of like in a back alley and they've had a fight, and then they realize they like each other and they kiss and they stop, and Megan just looks down and says like, I'm not supposed to like you. And it's just like, and at the end, so Megan runs away from camp and then comes back and like breaks up their graduation ceremony in her cheerleading outfit and has like written a cheer for Graham. Mm-hmm. And it's so sweet. And yeah, like it is, they're both like fantastic actresses. They have such good chemistry. And it's just so well written that I think it does like, the whole movie finds this great balance between really heightened campness and like a really sincere vibe. I also want to mention this. I love this story that Clay Duvall and Natasha Lyonne are like really good friends in real life. And the way that Natasha Lyonne got this role is that she was giving Clay Duvall a ride to the audition, and she was not supposed to be auditioning. And basically just kind of like came in with her and was like, hey, what is this movie? What do you got? Is it a cheerleader? I could be a cheerleader. And like read for the role and ended up getting it because she came along for the ride. So I think the fact that they're really good friends, obviously reads. And yeah, it's like, yeah, I think that is kind of the heart of this movie.
I mean, I would definitely say that Natasha Lyonne's performance elevates the movie into the stratosphere. Like, she does such, I think she's so good in this. Like, she's so funny and interesting, and I really love her in it. I will say, so a couple of my random thoughts are, like, the movie has very much combined with Saved in my mind. So I like didn't know when she was going to be like swimming underwater and like hit her head. I feel like we should watch Saved because
definitely.
Even now I'm kind of like, it's like they very much bleed together. Oh, and I love that like randomly at the gay bar they go to was like, what's her face? Like Julie Delpy or whatever.
Yeah.
From like before, after, and during Midnight.
And American Werewolf in Paris, which was bad.
Okay. Oh, it's before Sunrise.
Also a thing, probably.
Before and after like Sunrise and Sunset and like the eclipse. Like, okay, yeah, she's just like randomly like bonjour in like the gay bar. I think she's French, right? Like, I mean, her name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
Oui.
Yeah. So, like, obviously, like, it's such a fun movie, and we love it. We
recommend, highly recommend to a friend. Watch But I'm a Cheerleader if you haven't seen it, or rewatch it if it's been a while. It's a great Pride watch because Pride is coming up.
Of course.
And speaking of Pride coming up, so next week is the first week of June and it's the beginning mm-hmm. of Pride Month. And we have a little song planned for you. We're doing a mini series. And so for Pride Month, we are doing all drag movies.
We're calling it Dr. Drag.
Are we? We're going to workshop a title and I'll splice it in. Yeah, so we'll do, there are 5 Wednesdays in June, so we will be bringing you 5 different iconic drag movies. Some, I'm sure, are classic favorites. Some are ones maybe you've not seen before, but are worth a watch. And we're really excited.
I am so excited. And if you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you pod. It helps more people find us. And share with your family and your friends.
Please, word of mouth is always appreciated.
Share with your roots.
Share with your roots. We're definitely calling this episode like touching up our roots. If you would like to send us a movie suggestion or just say hi, that's always lovely. You can email us at videoqueenspod@gmail.com or tweet us at videoqueenspod on Twitter.
And follow us on Instagram at videoqueenspod.
We need Instagram now. We are everywhere and so accessible to you. Well, that's all for now, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.